The myth of Orpheus is the myth of poetic creation. And this poem is my version of Orpheus. I think the poem as a whole is about shaping loss, giving loss a contour or a form that makes the actual experience of loss bearable. Orpheus alone. It was an adventure much could be made of, a walk on the shores of the darkest known river, among the hooded, shoving crowds by steaming rocks and rows of ruined huts half buried in the muck, then to the great court with its marble yard, whose emptiness gave him the creeps, and to sit there in the sunken silence of the place and speak of what he had lost, what he still possessed of his loss, and then, pulling out all the stops, describing her eyes, her forehead where the golden light of evening spread, the curve of her neck, the slope of her shoulders, everything, down to her thighs and calves, letting the words come as if lifted from sleep, to drift upstream against the water's will, where all the condemned and pointless labor, stunned by his voice's cadence, would come to a halt, and even the crazed, disheveled furies for the first time would weep, and the soot-filled air would clear just enough for her, the lost bride, to step through the image of herself and be seen in the light. As everyone knows, this was the first great poem, which was followed by days of sitting around in the houses of friends with his head back, his eyes closed, trying to will her return, but finding only himself again and again trapped in the chill of his loss, and finally, without a word, taking off to wander the hills outside of town, where he stayed until he had shaken the image of love and put in its place the world, as he wished it would be, urging its shape and measure into speech of such newness that the world was swayed, and trees suddenly appeared in the bare place where he spoke, and lifted their limbs and swept the tender grass with the gowns of their shade, and stones, weightless for once, came and set themselves there, and small animals lay in the miraculous fields of grain and aisles of corn and slept. The voice of light had come forth from the body of fire, and each thing rose from its depths and shone as it never had. And that was the second great poem, which no one recalls any more. The third and greatest came into the world as the world, out of the unsayable, invisible source of all longing to be. It came as things come that will perish, to be seen or heard a while, like the coating of frost or the movement of wind, and then no more. It came in the middle of sleep, like a door to the infinite, and circled by flame came again at the moment of waking, and sometimes, remote and small, it came as a vision with trees by a weaving stream, brushing the bank with their violet shade, with somebody's limbs scattered among the matted mildewed leaves nearby, with his severed head rolling under the waves, breaking the shifting columns of light into a swirl of slivers and flecks. It came in a language untouched by pity, in lines lavish and dark, where death is reborn and sent into the world as a gift, so the future, with no voice of its own, nor hope of ever becoming more than it will be, might mourn.